Hey, everybody. Welcome again to F This Movie, the official podcast of FThisMovie.com. Movie love for movie lovers. My name is Patrick Brawley, and I'm super excited for this week's show because it is an annual show that I can't remember if we've done the last few years, but it is the year so far, which means I am joined for this very special, possibly annual show by JB. Hey, J-Bone.
Movies are good. They distract us from our dull, wretched lives. The year so far was put on hold.
Okay.
Mostly because of the pandemic and because people's viewing habits, and by people, I mean you and I, radically changed. But we're slowly getting back to normal.
We're getting back there. Movie theaters seem to be coming back and movies are coming out again. You said movies are good, and I agree with you in theory, but just this morning I read that they're doing a remake, a reimagining, a redo of Cliffhanger, and it made me hate movies all over again.
Yeah, well, I think I may have mentioned this before on the podcast. Years ago, my son, who is more plugged into the actual entertainment industry than I, suggested that all the studios were looking for was to mine and exploit the IP that they already owned. And if I had taken that to heart and made some stealthy investments, I could have made a lot of money because that was the bellwether for everything that was to come. Imagine just a couple short years ago thinking we'd get a Firestarter remake.
I don't get it. It was not that Firestarter remake was really bad. And I don't have high hopes for a Cliffhanger remake. Kids don't know what Cliffhanger is. Why do they care about the branding?
Every time one of these comes out, I imagine the same thing. And especially for the Disney live action remakes of animation, that they feel they have the parents because of the nostalgia factor. And the parents will somehow imbue their children with a curiosity to either A, see it, or B, see it with the parents, because God knows young people don't go to the movies anymore. So maybe if they can bogart a ticket for mom and dad, they'll spend 2 hours with mom and dad. I don't know, because they're already bogarting mom and dad's streaming service passwords. Although I have it on very good authority that recently a very old man who swore he would never do it.
As recently as a week ago.
In the words of myself, when I finally broke down and did it, it was like I was robbing a bank. We're in. And of course, this was to see a stand-up special by the person who lent me the credentials and to see a stand-up special that you suggested.
Yes.
The John Mulaney special, as you said in the last Patreon thing.
Column, whatever you want to call it.
Is very much worth people's time. It's pretty epic in terms of what it's actually about. I don't want to spoil it.
Yeah. So big picture stuff. Do you think it has been a good year so far for movies?
Yes, in that Super Mario Brothers is this year's Maverick.
Yeah.
And it is getting people back to the theaters, and families are rediscovering, oh, this is a fun thing that we like to do. And as far as I can tell, you can speak to this better than I can. Everything that you do outside of the house is expensive.
Yes.
But given that, isn't taking your family to the movies one of the cheaper outings you can do?
We can argue
that it's overpriced.
Yeah.
But you take it to a baseball game. I know it's a lot more than that.
Sure.
A concert, unless the band is being very cognizant of not charging through the roof. There is a casino.
Take my kids to the casino.
Well, that I wasn't suggesting you do. There's a casino The ads make it seem like it's close, but I don't think it's close. And anyway, long story short, the casino has a theater, and it seems like this theater is where musical acts that I enjoyed as a youngster, it's where they go to die. And the nostalgia factor is high because it's like Missy Elliott, she won a Grammy. And recently they announced that four semi-original members of the Doobie Brothers had gotten back together, because we're talking, I mean, that band is 50 years old. I mean, I'm amazed that they're still playing. So I was looking at this, and there was a nostalgic factor, because when I was a teen, I went to see them. And the tickets to this show are crazy.
Yeah.
I stared at the screen, and I was like, I don't get it. So if you wanted to take your family on a Sunday outing, besides this forest preserve, what's cheaper than a movie?
We do a lot of digging holes. That's free.
Digging holes in the desert where you can bury all the problems?
Yeah.
AKA Joe Pesci in Casino. You know,
Patrick, sadly, we don't have deserts close to us like you guys do.
There's a lot of holes in the desert.
I know.
So, lately, when I go to the show, there are hundreds of small children who are there or have just enjoyed Mario Brothers. And this makes me happy because it's a sign that the movie-going experience might still be alive. I noticed in getting ready for today's podcast that Cocaine Bear, which I believe I enjoyed more than you, is one of the 10 highest grossing films of the year so far.
I couldn't believe the top 10.
Which I believe is one of the biblical signs of the apocalypse.
Because Shazam is in the top 10, and that was a big flop. I mean, it's early. It's just now May.
And everything's relative.
Yeah.
Now, did you see Cocaine Bear?
I did.
Okay. I thought it was fun, and it reminded me of a drive-in movie from the 70s.
Yeah, I thought it couldn't quite pick a lane. It was, at times, trying to just be a straightforward 70s drive-in movie, and at times trying to be ironic and ha-ha funny, and I thought it both things stepped on the other one. And so I thought it was never funny, and it tried to be funny a lot of times. And I thought, except for an opening quote, or like there was an opening card. I don't even remember what it said, but I remember Erica and I both laughing at the opening card. And then I don't think I laughed again the entire movie.
They desperately wanted the R. But I would agree with you, even though I enjoyed it more than you do, I would agree with you that some of the violence seems misplaced for the eventual tone that the film has.
Yes.
That there's a couple scenes of tremendous violence that seem a little much. But I kind of thought that about Renfield, too.
I still haven't seen Renfield. I desperately wanted. There were two movies that I tried to squeeze in this weekend, Renfield and Air, and was not able to see either because our son got sick. The good news is, by the time this podcast comes out, I think Renfield will be on VOD and I will have seen it.
I believe I read something on the Twitter machine to that effect, and
yeah.
I can't recommend Air enough. When you consider that it's a film about a shoe, which fulfills...
Not just a shoe deal.
When you realize that it fulfills a prophecy made maybe 60 years ago, there's a short animated film by Ernest Pintoff called The Critic that won the Academy Award for Best Short Animated Film. And it's famous because it's a whole bunch of abstract things. And it's Mel Brooks narrating it as a befuddled theater goer trying to make sense of it. And at one point, famously, because I've seen this film hundreds of times, Brooks opines about the filmmaker saying he could have done something. He could have made a shoe. So now that has come true, and we have a film about a shoe. But again, I am such a fan of Ben Affleck as a filmmaker. He's a more modern Ron Howard. The Town, Argo, I haven't seen Gone Girl yet. Air, these are solid films in a certain lane where we used to get a lot more films in that lane.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to bring back the adult, I was going to say the adult movie, but that, of course, implies
the
porn.
Adult drama.
Right.
Almost, in some cases, sort of ripped from the headlines, but in a more classic sense, like Dog Day Afternoon.
Right.
Speaking of Ron Howard, I finally caught up with 13 Lives.
Okay, yeah, so that was technically last year, but I haven't seen it.
And I'm convinced that the reason it wasn't more popular or that it didn't get more of a discussion is because Ron Howard was too successful in that it's one of the most harrowing films I've ever seen.
Oh, yeah. No, thank you.
You want to talk about someone who he's not exploiting. He's not mining. He has gotten to the heart of what made that rescue so heroic. And parts of it are very hard to watch, especially if you're claustrophobic.
Yeah, I can't even go back to watch The Descent because not because of the monster stuff, but because of the like
the cave stuff.
Yeah, the cave stuff.
Colin Farrell, excellent as usual. Vigo is great. Recently, my son took me to see X in concert, the band, and I thought I was never going to get to see X live for a number of reasons. And when I got home, I did some research on the internet machine, and I came upon the puzzling fact that the lead singer of X, Xene Cervenka, was once married to Viggo Mortensen. And I began to try to imagine what that marriage was like. Don't try.
Xene and Viggo. That's
that checks several boxes on a census.
What's
form.
Their couple's name? You know, you can't do a Bennifer with them. Real quick, Gone Baby Gone. Gone Baby Gone was just added to HBO Max. If you're interested in finally checking it out, I think
it's his best movie. Yeah,
everyone
I've ever talked to. And isn't that the one with Amy?
Amy Ryan.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of her. So did you see Knock at the Cabin?
I did.
And you liked it?
I liked it a lot.
Okay, so that alone makes me want to see it because, of course, I have M. Night Shyamalan disease, where during a certain period of time, I was burned so many times, I just can't go back.
You may not like it at all. It's streaming on Peacock if you're interested.
I found the trailer intriguing. I had a feeling you had seen Knock at the Cabin, and the little crazy double feature I came up with was you... Oh, I've arranged this as a series.
Yes, you should probably explain that to the listeners because I think you explained it before we started recording.
There might just be a structure to this one, folks.
And
it's a series of double features that you would never actually program as a double feature. But what makes it as a double feature is me, with no evidence whatsoever, assuming Patrick has seen the first film and me knowing that I've seen the second. So the match for Knock at the Cabin is 80 for Brady.
Okay, interesting.
Because they came out around the same time. That's the only thing they have in common.
And they're both about the end of the world.
But in 80 for Brady, it's deep subtext. It's you really have to read between the lines. I did a column on 80 for Brady. I'll just briefly say it's half a good movie, that it's one of those cases where it's one half of the movie battling with the other, and half of the movie is what got the stars to sign on, and the other half of the movie is what was in the trailer to convince people that what they really want to see Oscar winner what they really want to see multiple Oscar winner Sally Field do is eat hot wings.
I would watch Sally Field do anything, including eat hot wings.
Well, oddly enough, what got her to sign on is the subplot in which her husband is way too dependent on her and needs to learn how to do things for himself given that they've been married forever. And you're shaking your head, but in terms of an elderly couple, to me, that's more interesting to see worked out than someone eating hot wings.
Sure. I could understand that. I just saw yesterday a commercial for Book Club 2.
Yes.
And first of all, it assumes way too much familiarity with the original book club that I don't have.
I'm guessing, I'd have to look it up, I'm guessing the first book club was very popular.
Well, it must have been if they're making a second one, and the way they say, like, the book club gang is back and Sherry's getting married. I know it's not Sherry, but like Sherry's getting married, and I don't know who that is, but I think it's the Jane Fonda character. Jane Fonda, of course, being the commonality between 80 for Brady. Yeah, it made over $100 million on a budget of 14.
But is Lily Tomlin a member of the book club?
I don't think so. Book club is Diane Keaton, Jane Fonda, Candace Bergen, and Mary Steenburgen.
Okay, it seems to me the popularity of book club is what got 80 for Brady greenlit.
Yeah, I mean, I'm glad that there's an audience that's being served movies. I just wish they weren't kind of pandering.
It's very much pandering, because when I went to see 80 for Brady, it was opening weekend. I was the only man in the theater. I was the only man in the theater who wasn't 80. And let me tell you, for all my quibbles about the film fighting with itself, it played in the theater I was in.
Yeah.
Boy, howdy. It was very, very popular. And the theater was full of not just laughter, but the infamous knowing chuckle.
Yeah, 80 for Brady is streaming on Paramount Plus, and part of me was like, should I watch it just to be part of the conversation that's no longer happening? And I decided against it.
There are worse ways to spend 90 minutes. I actually think there's enough worthwhile in it. And as I said in my column, Jane Fonda specifically seems to be fighting against the strictures of trying to make this nonsensical confection that says nothing, and that there's two scenes where she specifically, where her character is facing aging in some very specific ways. And I thought it was fearless. There's two scenes where Jane Fonda appears with no makeup whatsoever. And I was like, yes, because that's what an 80-year-old person looks like, and no one should have a problem with
it. Yeah. Will I see it? I don't know. I really hope that you will see Knock at the Cabin and let me know what you think. Yeah. It's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. Again, it being early in the year helps. I thought Dave Bautista was really good. I thought it was really well made. It goes to some places that I applaud it for going. What is the last Shyamalan movie that you saw?
The one where the kids visit their grandparents.
The Visit. Okay.
Yeah.
No, that's not true, because you saw, wasn't Glass after that? I don't know for sure.
Remember.
But I know you saw Glass because we saw it together.
My favorite part of Glass is that someone we both went to high school with is in it.
Yes.
That's my favorite part of that. Speaking of pandering to a specific audience.
Sure.
When I first moved here, I noticed a curious poster in the lobby of the movie theater that's become the one I frequent the most. And it was a poster for Jesus Revolution.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and I kind of figured out what it was. And I thought, you know, I wish them well, but it's not for me. Jesus Revolution, which I believe came out on physical media either last week or tomorrow, is currently the 10th highest box office grossing film in the country for the year, proving there's an audience. And there's another film called 1,000 to 1, which I think mines the same territory. because after seeing a different movie, I was waiting in the lobby as we were leaving, and there was a woman who had just come out of 1001 for what she professed was not her first time seeing it, and she was sort of lobbying the people in the lobby to go see it because she was loudly proclaiming to all who would listen that it changed her life.
Oh.
So I assume it had something to do with religion, and I wondered if Jesus Revolution or and 1001 were major studios, or if we were looking at what comes down to four-walling, where the entity sort of rents the theater for the weekend. I don't know.
Yeah, there were a handful around Easter of religious options theatrically, Jesus Revolution being, I think, the biggest success, and that's a Lionsgate movie.
And there's a third one, too, because it's still playing, but not every day. Like, it's only playing Wednesdays and Sundays.
Yeah, it's some bullshit called, like, He is Risen or something. Jesus Revolution stars Joel Courtney from Super 8, which almost makes me want to see it, but Joel Courtney has not... He was in those Kissing Booth movies on Netflix, which I know were very, very popular, but I saw one of them, and they were... It was not good.
Yes, he's featured very prominently on the poster, which, to give the film some due, the poster is very interesting, and it's sort of a throwback in that it's painted, and it's very attractive. It's a poster that makes the movie look like it came out in 1972.
It's not a movie.
Because that's a selling point for its intended audience, too. Oh, it looks like a throwback? That's for me.
They love that. But Joel Courtney is also in the opening moments. Well, I guess that's a spoiler. He's in the opening sequence of Sick, which is, I think, one of the high points of the year. It went straight to streaming, unfortunately. It went straight to Peacock, but I think had they opened it theatrically, they could have made some money.
And remind me what Sick is?
Sick is Pamela Adlon's daughter, Gideon Adlon, and another actress whose name I don't know. They're going to quarantine from COVID. It's written by Kevin Williamson. It's directed by John Hyams, the son of Peter Hyams.
Oh, wow.
And it's a slasher movie set during COVID, about COVID, and has some things to say about COVID. It's a little hard to recommend because I think for some people it triggers some very unpleasant memories of COVID, because it's all about, you know, wiping down your groceries and staying 10 feet away from your best friend, and but it's really good. I highly recommend it.
I don't know if you noticed, I just took out a pen and, as usual, I'm writing things down.
Oh, very nice.
Speaking of slashers, did you see Scream 6?
Of course.
And would you recommend it?
Did you see Scream 5?
I don't know. I'm so addled when it comes to these things that the Fathom event a few months ago was Scream 2.
Mm-hmm.
And I enjoyed it way more than I should have because I recognized that film's flaws, but I was sort of lost in this weird timeless limbo because I was enjoying it and wondering why all the actors seem so young. Because it sort of, during the time I was watching it, I kind of forgot just how long ago.
Yeah, right.
It came out.
25 years old.
So Scream 6 is the one that's in New York.
Yes.
Because I did see the trailer, and Scream 5 is their last attempt to bring the old cast back and sort of pass the baton, right?
This one does a little bit of it because it does have Courtney Cox, although she is very unnecessary to this movie. Like, probably should have been left out, and Scream 5 should have been the last attempt.
Right.
So
you would recommend Scream 6?
I would, as somebody who enjoys several of the Scream movies and enjoyed Scream 5. It just started streaming on Paramount Plus last week, so there's an easy buy-in. It's free. if you subscribe.
Well, it's not an easy buy-in because, again, hey, JB, it's streaming on the one service you don't subscribe to.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say get Paramount Plus just to see Scream 6.
Are there streaming services that I subscribe to that you don't?
Do you have the Criterion Channel?
Yes.
I do not.
Every so often, they send me a present to thank me. Not only to thank me for keep on keeping on, but also because I'm a charter subscriber.
Yeah.
I love that they try to send me gifts. And as I've said before on the website, I really consider that a charitable donation every month because I believe in it and I want it to continue to be a going concern.
Yeah.
So if there's a month where I don't watch a movie, which is rare, but yeah. If there's a month where I don't watch a movie, I don't think it's money that's poorly spent.
I feel like I wasn't using it, and so I canceled the subscription because I still have so many Criterion discs that I need to watch.
Right.
But I feel like we're at the point now, even though we subscribe to too many streaming services, I feel like we use all of them every month.
As do we.
Yeah.
In fact, I think I've talked about this before on the podcast. I was talking to one of my new neighbors who makes do with several streaming services and no cable. And I'm wondering if it would be possible to just go with streaming services and get rid of cable. But then, I don't know, would I get an antenna? How on earth would I watch Jeopardy every day? Because, of course, I'm of a certain age.
I don't think there are any regular TV shows that we watch, even SNL. Now we're just streaming The Next Day on Peacock.
Right. And the advantage of that, we're set in our ways. We tend to watch it. Oh, I know why we watch it. Because they started carrying it live nationwide because NBC had nothing else to show
right. That
time slot. We watch it at 8:30 on Saturday.
That's a weird feeling, huh?
It's much better at 8:30 on a Saturday than it is at 10:30 on a Saturday. Speaking of SNL, said the king of segues, did you see Murder Mystery 2?
Yes, I did.
And what did you think of that?
It's not great. I was in the mood for something that didn't ask much of me. And that movie delivers that. I think Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, having now worked together 3 times, have good chemistry together. And I liked that it was a movie about a marriage. They push each other's buttons a little bit, but it's about a marriage where the couple seems to actually like one another and want the best for one another, as opposed to just hating each other and resenting each other, and then at the end remembering that they're in love, which is what most Hollywood portrayals of marriage are.
Which is hack work.
Right.
So would you say Murder Mystery 2 is better than their previous film, Let's Just Not Talk About It?
Okay, first of all, their previous film was Murder Mystery 1.
Right, but I mean...
And before that, of course, was Just Go With It.
Oh, wait, say that again.
Just Go With It.
I can never remember that title because recently Adam Sandler received the Mark Twain Prize for humor. And I watched pieces of it on the YouTube machine because they broke it up into little easy to digest nuggets of each presenter. And I thought this was interesting for 2 reasons. Number one, every Mark Twain Prize for American Humor ceremony has been carried on PBS, except this one. So at this point, PBS said, okay, we're drawing the line, not Sandler. And the pieces that I watched made it look like the entire thing was an infomercial for Murder Mystery 2.
Oh, that's depressing.
It almost seemed as if Sandler said, I'll show up and I'll bring my buddies and we'll be very entertaining, but this has to be the subtext of the whole evening, which I sort of objected to.
I recently rewatched Just Go With It.
Yes.
Because I was, I was at like a trampoline park with Rosie doing work, and it was on like TBS, and I caught the last 15 minutes of it with the sound off. And I was like, is this better than I remember? So I watched it because it was free on Amazon, and it's not better than I remember.
Because I still remember, and I don't mean to be a pedant, I don't mean to be pedantic about this. Just Go With It is a farce, and a farce has rules. And you get to the end of that film, and there's a scene, I think it's in a bar, where two characters talk about what just happened at a wedding that didn't go. And I'm like, are you crazy? Did a set burn down? Was there a hurricane? How on earth could you leave out? There's a scene in every farce where everything becomes known, and it's a flurry of comic hijinks. And Just Go With It is missing the most important.
It skips that scene. I don't think I knew when we saw it, unless there was a credit to that effect that I'm not remembering, that it was a remake of Cactus Flower.
Oh. Well, now this makes me want to seek out Cactus Flower and see if they were just aping a scene that's missing in Cactus Flower. I have a prediction, though. I bet Cactus Flower has the wedding scene.
I'll bet it does. I've seen Cactus Flower and I don't remember.
Cactus Flower's Goldie Hawn and Walter Matthau, right?
Yeah. And Ingrid Bergman? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Jennifer Aniston, of course, the Ingrid Bergman of our generation.
No.
No, probably not.
Because I can't imagine her in Casablanca. So clearly, on opening day, you lined up 12 hours early.
Yeah.
To get in line for John Wick 4.
Like I saw it like a week late.
How on earth?
We couldn't make it work the weekend it opened.
Yeah, I actually think the same thing happened to me. And of course, when you wait a week, then you're subject to maybe hearing and seeing things about it.
Yeah.
You recently said something about it on the website, which I agreed with 100%. I enjoyed the hell out of it. I just thought it was very, very entertaining. But I can see someone who perhaps is not quite as in love with the action genre.
Yeah.
Thinking it was a little self-indulgent and long.
Yeah.
But again, we've had this discussion hundreds of times. It's not like they charged you an extra $10 for the last half hour. That whole sequence when he's going up the steps.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil it. I just thought that was inspired, man. But I could actually feel audience members in my screening being exasperated because of what that was going to force him to do. And I was like, well, you know, the whole thing about movies is you put obstacles in the way of your protagonist. I gave that film a lot of credit. I especially like it's something that I'm really starting to love Mrs. Maisel on Amazon for. Mrs. Maisel seems very intent on hiring actors of a certain age that were briefly famous for one thing and giving them work.
Okay.
One of the boys from American Pie shows up as one of the writers on the Gordon Fuller show or whatever that talk show is called. Annie Golden from the movie Hair shows up. And it's like, you're so happy that they're still alive and they're still getting work. It seemed as if you're much more of an action disciple than I am. It seemed like John Wick was doing a lot of that.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's certainly, and again, there's a lot of people that we know online that know the action way better than I do. So there's some people that I don't even have an awareness of that. They're like, oh, that's so-and-so, you know,
right. But and sort of giving them a final bow, because the gentleman who was the manager of the original hotel,
Ian McShane.
Right.
Okay.
He's had a career.
Yeah.
Whenever I watch a John Wick movie, I'm reminded that Ian McShane is in one of my favorite mystery movies, The Last of Sheila.
Right.
which after 50 years is slowly developing a cult following. It's taken quite a while.
Yeah.
You know what I think? I think Rian Johnson and the Knives Out franchise
definitely
is partially responsible, because in most of the interviews I've read with Rian Johnson about Knives Out, he is not shy about expressing his love for The Last of Sheila.
Yeah.
Which of course means if you're listening to this and you've never seen The Last of Sheila, it's available from Warner Archive. It was written by Anthony Perkins and Stephen Sondheim, who are not known as screenwriters, but they were both puzzle enthusiasts. And man, is it good.
Yeah. John Wick 4 being long, you know, it's that thing where it's like, if it's good and I'm into it, I don't mind the length. And I've heard it compared to The Good, the Bad, the Ugly, that like, okay, we're closing this out, so we have to close it out with an epic. But there is certainly this weird thing where no movie can run under 2 hours now. I watched the new, I think it's Peter Farrelly. I don't know if it's Peter or Bobby. I think it's Peter. He has a movie out called Champions that I watched the other night that runs like 205. And could have been, like we were saying about Mystery Men on the Patreon show, like it probably should have been 95 to 100 minutes, because there's no structure, there's no shape. I enjoyed it. It's sweet. And it's about, you know, like people who aren't terrible people trying to be better people. But on what planet does it need to be over 2 hours? And that's the, I don't know if it's a thing now where we've given up on editing, or we think people are coming out to the theater, we need to give them their money's worth. Because it used to be, you know, you would try to cut movies down to fit in more showings a day. But I guess now that everything's on 20 screens, you don't have to worry about that.
And that went by the wayside, because with COVID, there's fewer films, more screens. And so we'll just show up multiple times. But the other night I was watching something very long on, oh, I don't know, let's say it was Netflix. And I wondered if one of the metrics that Netflix uses to, I don't know, attract investors, or I don't know how business works, is the amount of time that you spend on the app. Because I had been away from Netflix for a year, and I was astounded at how quickly Netflix puts something else on.
Oh, yeah.
Not just a screen that says click here, but the mm-hmm. next show begins. Mm-hmm. And so the singularity is achieved. I was taken aback by that. It's quite odd. I know Woody Harrelson was recently the host on SNL, and it seemed the main reason for that was to plug Champions, but Champions sort of came and went. It did get a theatrical release.
It did, but it felt like
it wasn't a very
even,
long.
Yeah, it felt like even by the time he hosted SNL, it was dead in the water.
I was in Target the other night for the first time in years, because I'm not the shopper. And there was one little shelf of Blu-rays, and it was the saddest thing on earth. It wasn't a rack that held the Blu-rays so that you can see them. It was a series of shelves with the Blu-rays piled
so that
you could only see the blue spine.
Right.
I'm like, so now are we bemoaning the fact that physical media sales are down? And could this be one of the reason?
Right.
Because they don't have people known as rack jobbers anymore, which is a whole other show. But I did notice that one of the Blu-rays for sale was A Man Called Otto. And I shouldn't be surprised, because it's May, but I remember looking at it and think, well, that window was short.
Yeah, but the movie was a success. I mean, it came out at the end of last year, I think, and was one of those that just stayed in theaters like for a while and played to an older audience. It made over $100 million.
But that might have been, it stayed in theaters because of a lack of new product.
Sure.
And also, it seemed the release of A Man Called Otto was an attempt to get someone a nomination, and that didn't happen.
Yeah, but I think it was also like a, I think it did a high per screen number. proving that like the audience was coming out to this movie.
Yeah, it played at my local theater for a really long time. I'm now going to suggest that now and in the future, we refer to this film that's getting people back into theaters as Super Mario Bros. Before Hoes.
Okay.
Let's call it that.
All right.
And obviously, I haven't seen it yet because I'm 61. but as I said, I did see Air. And
yes.
I was a big fan of Air. And it's really, really well done, even to the way that it handles the fact that Michael Jordan is in the film, but he's not in the film. Jason Bateman shows up and is just a reliable supporting performance.
Yeah.
It's very unashamedly about what it's about, but it doesn't shy away from some sort of uncomfortable truths about athletes being exploited and the nature of that exploitation in terms of the way the money is distributed.
Okay.
It's a real classy job and a very entertaining use of 2 hours. I can't recommend it enough. It's one of my favorite films of the year so far.
I need to see it. And we want to get out to the theater to see it. And I know the week we do, it'll show up on Amazon. But I remember being depressed because it's an Amazon production, right?
Is it?
I believe so. I remember being depressed years ago. I mean, this is like 10 years ago now, when Draft Day was coming out. And of course, that movie has become a meme on our site, and Adam Riske loves it. And it comes up at least once a week on the site. But I remember feeling like this whole like gambling fantasy football culture had so embedded itself in the American consciousness that now we're making movies not about the big game, but about picking players to play the big game. And that, to me, that seemed so cynical. Now, Draft Day isn't cynical. If anything, it's actually a very like sort of optimistic, big-hearted movie. But I can't help but feel a little bit, and I haven't seen Air, so I'm not saying I feel that way about Air, but just we're not making sports movies anymore. We're making deal movies, and that's fucked up to me.
I agree that it's fucked up, but I saw Air more along the lines of Argo, in that clearly we're all aware of Michael Jordan's basketball career. But did you know this little story from when he started out? And we all know about the hostage crisis, but did you really know the story behind how we got them out? That it's sort of not human interest, but that it's a
right.
different way of looking at a phenomenon that sort of not personalizes it, but sheds some light on a facet of it that people were not aware of.
Sure.
And just what Air tells you, and this is not what the film is trying to do, what Air tells you about the athletic shoe industry at its beginnings, I'm sorry, it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Because I'm old enough to remember that people wore shoes. There were shoes that you wore, and they were delightful and uncomfortable. And children wore what we used to refer to as gym shoes.
Mm.
And then something happened, and my generation said, fuck these shoes, I'm going to wear something comfortable. And it truly was a revolution. I mean,
no.
It might not be something that's, you know, as grand as women getting the vote, but it literally changed what everyone wore on their feet. No
yeah.
one wears dress shoes anymore.
No. No, not really.
And I will admit that I am of a certain age, and F this movie this week is being brought to you by the fine folks at Kizik. do you know what they are?
I just assume it's like some sort of orthopedic shoe.
Well, it's a shoe. And if you're ready for the next level of laziness, there are some people who have quite a hard time bending over. Kiziks are designed so that you slip them on and you never have to play the thumb in the back of your heel game. It's sort of astounding.
Yeah.
And it's already being ripped off because the other night I saw a Skechers commercial where it's like, oh, Skechers, where'd you get that idea? But I love my Kiziks.
I basically wear all of my Nikes long enough that they become slip-on shoes.
You'll get my Kiziks when you pry them from my fingers, although they'll never be on my fingers because I don't have to use
That's
my
right.
We recently asked your daughter what she wants for her birthday, and you'll be proud to know that your brand loyalty has shifted to the next generation.
Okay, good.
Several of the things on her list are branded with your favorite.
Sure. That's because Nike. She saw Air.
No, she didn't. She wants Nike shorts and Nike shirts.
That has nothing to do with me and everything to do with her friends at school, would be my guess.
Yeah, I actually wondered what was happening because I knew it wasn't the movie.
Right.
To make 11-year-olds covet Nike products.
Yeah. Maybe TikTok. I don't know. Either way, it's depressing.
Right. I bet it's the TikToks because, you know, all that stuff is made in China. So it makes sense.
Right. Did you see Megan?
No, I didn't. Jan came very close. We have a new ritual where I sleep in on Sundays and she watches something I have no interest in.
Okay.
She came very close to watching Megan. Would you recommend it?
Absolutely.
Because that's another SNL episode this season. The star of Megan was clearly on that show to promote Megan.
Allison Williams, did she host? I don't remember. I mean, it's possible.
Now I'm confused because they did a filmed parody of it.
And oh, okay.
Williams was in it, but I'm not sure if she was the host.
Okay.
I think the host was someone else in the movie.
Okay. I can't remember who else is in that movie. But yeah, again, streaming on Peacock, so easy enough to watch.
It?
Yes, I would.
I have a problem with Crazy Doll movies.
What's your problem with Crazy Doll movies?
Well, it's too scary.
Oh, okay.
You know, say what you want about most horror films.
Yeah.
There's no way they could come true.
Right.
But Crazy Doll movies are all based. Did our listeners not realize this? Every Crazy Doll movie, every ventriloquist dummy that comes to life movie, those are all real. Those are all based on true stories.
Did you see they announced all of the
two things you should stay away from? Crazy Dolls. And Ouija boards.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Did you see they announced all the remaining Child's Play movies in 4K?
I saw that just this morning. I was on the Twitter machine and I was like, why are there so many pictures of Chucky here?
I love announcements like that because there's something liberating about like, well, I never have to own that. And I like those movies, but I'm not going to upgrade them to 4K. It's like when Severin last week announced their enormous Black Emmanuel box. And I was like, yes. Ooh, something I have no interest in. Okay. I mean, I would watch those movies if somebody handed them to me, but like, I'm not going to shell out $100-something to own all of the Black Emmanuel movies.
Oh my God. Why? Why?
I wish this was a video podcast, but listeners, the doll is now on the Zoom call and looking directly into the camera.
I'm listening to what you say, Jeff.
That doll needs to see Megan because that doll will get all the references.
John, don't make me correct you. You know,
why do you have
like
that doll?
Be corrected. Jan just went and got this out of her office, and I'm terrified right now. I'm terrified. She has these two little dolls. I don't know, Chang and Ang. What were their names? Yeah. They're little Jan dolls from the 60s.
Yeah.
And she used to do voices, and they used to talk to me about how they were going to misbehave when Jan wasn't in the room. And sometimes I would go on a trip and she would slip them into my luggage.
Mm.
So I would find them when I unpacked. folks, this is abuse.
So you've skipped out on some of the big, like, tentpole movies like Quantumania and Shazam and Dungeons and Dragons.
Did you see Quantumania?
I sure did.
And?
It's not a movie.
That's kind of what I felt. I saw the trailer several times, and it just... am I the only one where after the Avengers thing was resolved, it just seemed to be fumes or them casting about for a new direction?
Yeah, I think they're definitely trying to figure out where do we go from here, because I think a lot of people like you and like me, I thought I was still in on where Marvel was going, but each movie I see, I'm just kind of shrugging my shoulders and like, oh, that wasn't really for me. Whereas with the Avengers, it was like appointment viewing leading up to that. And maybe, you know, again, the week that this podcast is coming out, Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3 is coming out. Rob's review will have run.
Beginning of summer.
His review is, you know, positive. He liked a lot about it. People seem to be digging it. So maybe this will be the course correction that Marvel has been waiting for. But Quantumania just was like a weird 2-hour placeholder to be like, yeah, you like Marvel, right? Here's some Marvel characters doing nothing and changing nothing and not growing at all, literally or figuratively.
Lately, the series television that I enjoy, like, oh, I don't know, Ted Lasso or Mrs. Maisel or Barry, I find that you sort of, if you watch the show with any regularity, it gives you a glimpse into the writer's room. And there are episodes that move the story forward in an epic way. And there are other episodes that you can dismiss as placeholders.
Yeah. Which I'm fine with, like an Ant-Man placeholder movie that's just a little Ant-Man adventure. Like, not everything needs to add up to the next big story in Marvel. But I just thought, even as a placeholder, this was like really just spinning its wheels.
But that's what I liked about the original era of Marvel movies, in that they reminded me of serials for little children on Saturday mornings in a more innocent age, that not only was I enjoying a superhero movie, but I was also enjoying a piece of the puzzle that was going to add up to something bigger that I was enjoying being part of. Did you see Evil Dead Rise?
I did.
And?
I didn't love it. I thought it was okay. It was,
and it's Evil Dead Rise, the one that was going to go direct to Screaming.
Ooh.
Get it? See what I did there?
Look at you, was, Crypt Keeper.
Was Evil Dead Rise going to go direct to streaming, but it had some high-profile screening that went well, and they decided to give it a theatrical release?
Yeah, it was just going to go to HBO Max, and I think it's already worldwide made like $80 million of found money.
Because the reason I haven't seen it yet, this doesn't happen very often. I saw the trailer.
Yeah.
And I think it looks too scary.
Interesting. I would argue that it is not.
Or is it just because I was scared of my mom and don't want to see that transferred to the big screen?
I don't want to spoil the jokes, but how great was Mulaney's whole thing about one of your parents?
The grandparent. I gave him so much credit for that because, A, it's really dark.
Really dark.
If the new Mulaney special and the new Chris Rock special have anything in common, oh my God, they went there. But also, in the case of Mulaney, there's no child who has never felt that way, but you feel that way because you're a child. And,
you know,
the older you get, I think, the more seriously you take death.
Sure. Evil Dead Rise, speaking of death, is okay. It's probably my least favorite Evil Dead movie to date, but as I brought up somewhere, maybe on the podcast last week. I didn't love 2013 when we saw it, and that movie grew on me. So perhaps Evil Dead Rise will grow on me as well.
And I still remember, perhaps, being too mean to 2013.
Sure.
Because I remember we saw it, and then we immediately went back and did the podcast.
Right.
And
which is almost always a mistake.
Always a mistake, yeah. Except for Prometheus. And Adam liked it more than we did, and the podcast became you and I convincing him he was wrong.
I think I was in the middle, but I haven't listened to that episode maybe ever. So,
and I need to revisit it because there are certain elements of it that I think I took for granted that I should have recognized more for being a leap forward. I've seen the trailer 10 times, and I don't know. It seems to me that film will touch me in a way I don't want to be touched.
I would be surprised if that were the case. I think that might be giving it too much credit. I think it's pretty surfacey.
Okay.
Like, I don't think there's enough subtext there for it to really shake you at your core. I think it's like, hey, that's gross. Hey, that's bloody, you know. And the performance by the mom is really good.
Just the whole bad mom thing.
Sure.
I don't like. And then we have an example, as we do every year, of a movie that somehow doesn't look like a movie. It looks like a fake movie that we would see in another movie that's showing us the movies. The touchstone of this is Funny People.
Right.
Where we see all these posters on Adam Sandler's wall for right. crazy movies that
Merman and the one where he's like a baby. I might have seen the movie you're about to talk about.
The movie in question is Mafia Mama.
Oh, no, I haven't seen that one.
And it's the only case this year where halfway through the trailer, out loud in the theater, I said, nope.
I admire you for making it halfway. I haven't seen a trailer for it. I like Toni Collette. I want her to get work, but it's like, not like this. And I was actually surprised to hear someone who saw it. I don't remember. It was a podcast I was listening to. Talk about how violent it is, which kind of made me want to see it.
That how they're going to navigate that in terms of the tone of a comedy.
Exactly. But,
I could imagine after the trailer, someone saying, well, were you offended as an Italian? And my response being, no, I'm offended as a human being.
They may have started with the title and worked backwards on that one.
Oh, my God.
I thought you were going to mention Ghosted, which is not a movie, but it is a movie.
I'm trying to. Is that streaming right now?
It's on Apple TV.
And what is that about?
That's the one that Ana de Armas was on SNL to promote. It's her and Chris Evans.
Oh, okay. The title throws you off because we've been talking about horror films.
Yeah, you think it's something supernatural. It's not.
They're like both spies and they.
She's a spy and he's a farmer. He didn't know she was a spy when she ghosted him. There was a really interesting interview. It's directed by Dexter Fletcher, who directed Rocket Man, which I know you're a big fan of.
I am.
And he gave an interview recently where he talked about very openly some of the uphill battles of, you know, making a movie for a streamer. And he said, yeah, there was originally like 20 minutes of character development and setup at the beginning, but some Apple executives, I'm completely paraphrasing, so I apologize if I get this wrong, but some Apple executives were like, people will turn it off within the first few minutes if this is in the movie. So they cut it all out. So it goes to what you were saying, where the longer you watch, the better it is for their metrics or their revenue or whatever. But now we're making movies.
God forbid you should turn. Well, it's like there's a monkey with a button. And when the monkey gets bored, he's going to press the button. Now, am I confusing this with something else, or is Stanley Tucci in it?
Stanley Tucci is not in it.
And I'm confusing it with something that I keep seeing the trailer for in theaters.
What the shit is Stanley Tucci in?
Because I think that's Two Spies too. And
Two Spies and Stanley Tucci? Hold on, I'm looking
Tucci
it up.
Tucci is like, it looks like a big action movie where he's the CIA guy who trained one of them or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not finding a movie with Stanley Tucci that's in 2023, but Ghosted and what's the other one? Jennifer Lopez and Josh Duhamel. Oh, Shotgun Wedding.
Yes.
Are among the worst movies I've seen this year.
And Shotgun Wedding had that all over it. And I think
Shotgun Wedding was better than Ghosted.
I think there was a cast member of Shotgun Wedding who also did SNL.
It's very possible
to promote that.
Oh, it's that Amazon series Citadel.
You're right.
That's Stanley Tucci. And they're both spies. You're absolutely right. But Stanley Tucci is on it.
You know what? We've gotten to the point where we'll see something advertised. And Jan pointed this out the other day. And either overtly or covertly, we both pray that it's a movie. Because you see where this is going.
Yeah.
Because we're willing to spend 2 hours on it, but not 10 hours on it.
Right.
So when it turns out to be a series, we're like, God damn it.
And everything now is, well, two things. One, I'm tired of the phenomenon of like seeing something advertised and then not knowing how to watch it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I don't know where to go. I don't know how to find that. I can't remember the name of it. I sort of remember what it's about. But everything now, in particular, the sort of like true crime or documentary style shows or movies that Erica really loves are all broken down into like 3 episodes, 4 episodes. Instead of being a 100-minute documentary, it's a
where they actually
Netflix
have to make
series.
Where A, if it was a movie, they'd have to make choices and
edit. Right.
But B, because the point of the algorithm machine is to keep you watching forever. You know what I'm thinking? Because we watched it because of Erica's recommendation, The Female Evangelist, The Way Down.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was longer than it had any reason to be. And then a couple months later, they came up with 2 extra episodes.
Well, because she had died. So
right. But if you took, I believe there's 5 episodes.
Yeah.
So we're talking about roughly 5 hours.
Yeah.
It's almost like the filmmakers are saying, here, you edit it in your mind.
Because and it's everything now.
Those 5 hours could be cut into a compelling, fascinating 90-minute documentary.
It's every time there's a new, you know, quote-unquote documentary on Hulu or Amazon Prime or Netflix that Erica wants to watch, my heart sinks when I find out it's a 3 to 4 episode series instead of a 90-minute movie.
Okay, then I'm not alone.
No.
Have you seen either the direct-to-streaming Tetris or the direct-to-streaming Pinball?
No, I saw neither one.
Because the other day on the Twitter machine, someone was suggesting that they're the same movie, and it's another example of something being in development at a studio, and then there's something very similar. So
yeah.
Tetris looks interesting. I believe that's on Apple TV.
It is.
And because of my love of pinball and the fact that I actually own a pinball machine, see my heart swell with pride. The pinball movie looks fascinating to me because New York once had a prohibition against coin-operated amusement machines because the mafia was known to use those to launder money. And this is fascinating because for decades, Schaumburg had the same prohibition for the same reason, which is why GameWorks had you swipe a card because that's how they got away from the coin-operated.
Interesting.
And the movie Pinball, which I haven't seen yet, but I'm looking forward to, is about the young man who made the case in court that that should be stricken down. He made it possible for people in New York to play pinball again.
So here's my question. How do you watch it?
Well, I'll tell you.
Oh, you can rent it.
Well, no, because it's streaming.
It's a digital rental.
No,
it was not made for a streamer.
Because they trick you. You know how there's a column full of things that you can scroll through?
Yeah.
They're counting on you not to see the little thing under it that says rent / buy.
Right.
They're counting on you clicking on it, thinking it's free, and then turning to your wife and saying, do we have $5?
I have to find out about the man who saved Pinball, and he's played by Oscar nominee Mike Feist from West Side Story.
Yes, but in Pinball, he's wearing one of the most ridiculous fake mustaches I've ever seen. And I was around in the 70s, so I know what these things look like. I don't know what the makeup people were thinking, unless, of course, the real guy had, it looks like a broom.
The whole thing is stylized so that it's like a 70s movie. It's like a David O. Russell 70s movie where it's like everyone knows they're in the 70s.
It's crazy 70s.
Yeah.
And the examples of that I'm thinking of are the porn thing that Maggie Gyllenhaal did.
Oh, which I never watched. The
Deuce.
Everyone
knows it's the 70s.
Yeah.
And also Vinyl, which was on HBO.
Another show I didn't watch.
Something that got no attention, and I'm trying to figure out why. The man who invented Chippendales with Kumail Nanjiani.
Yeah.
Another example of something that should have been a movie.
Right.
But it's real good, and it was released and disappeared.
We watched a documentary series, of course, about that subject. And so by the time, because that's the trajectory, is it goes like podcast, documentary, narrative feature. So we watched the documentary, and by the time we were done with the documentary series, of course, because it couldn't be a movie, I felt like I had no reason to watch the Kumail Nanjiani version because I knew the story.
And you can tell me the actor's name, but it was an actor that we were completely unfamiliar with, and we watched the first season of White Lotus, which was astounding for any number of reasons, and the actor in question played the manager of the hotel.
Oh, I don't know his name, but I know who you're talking about.
And he was one of the main reasons to watch the show. He's
yeah.
amazing. Where has this guy been? And he shows up in The Man Who Invented Chippendales playing a completely different character. And he's equally exemplary. And he becomes one of your reasons for watching the show.
Does he play... is he Eric Roberts? Paul Schneider?
No.
Okay.
Paul Schneider was an early investor in Chippendales.
Right.
But the character in question goes to the nation Chippendales and says, this is a shit show. And he's a professional choreographer. And he adds a bunch of the elements that actually make Chippendales famous.
Got it. I was trying to look up the actor's name because of the way that IMDb is set up. It's fucking impossible to find anything. Murray Bartlett is his name.
And Murray Bartlett, because he has since shown up in a third thing, which I'm having a hard time remembering.
The Last of Us? Did you watch The Last of Us?
That's the show, and that's one of Jan's Sunday morning specials.
Ah.
The Last of Us, which Rob has been championing, had a bottle episode featuring Nick Offerman and Bartlett.
Oh, okay. He was the other. I heard a lot about that episode.
That
I didn't realize Murray Bartlett
was
the other guy.
Justifiably famous. And that's the third thing. And again, like all these actors who toil perhaps on the stage, lately I've been watching musical numbers from Broadway. And
sure.
The actor who plays J.J., He plays the newspaper editor in the Spider-Man movies. He's in Whiplash.
Yeah. I know who you're talking about.
J.K. Simmons?
Thank you, Jesus.
J.K. Simmons.
I was like Vern Schillinger, which was his name on Oz.
J.K. Simmons toils in character actor limbo. And one night I'm watching a musical number from the Nathan Lane revival of Guys and Dolls. Guys and Dolls, of course, the show that gave Nathan Lane his name. And I'm watching it and I'm like, wait, who's the tall? Oh, look, that's J.K. Simmons before he got famous.
And it's that's Oscar fun. Nominee J.K. Simmons, please, for playing but, Fred Mertz.
This is it Murray Bartlett?
Yeah.
He's the real deal. And I don't think this spoils anything because clearly our listeners should watch both seasons of White Lotus because it's sort of amazing. There is a rumor that what we think might have happened to Murray Bartlett at the end of season one was not permanent, and they might be bringing him back for season three.
Okay.
In the spirit of Wes Craven originally planning to kill off Deputy Dewey
right.
at the end of Scream 1,
right.
I would applaud this decision and suggest that that would be a good idea, especially because there's another character that they recently lost. No spoilers here.
No
You guys
spoilers.
Enjoyed White Lotus, right?
Sure. I wasn't as into season two as I was season one. I think I liked the first season better.
And like Mamma Mia, a film I will continue to champion, not only is it full of entertaining nonsense, but watching it every week is like taking a vacation.
Sure. Let's I agree
not,
with that.
Let's not ignore this wonderful facet.
Have you seen Mamma Mia 2? That's what the one everyone says is better.
And I cannot for the life of me understand, because I enjoyed Mamma Mia 2, but I don't think it's anywhere near as good as the first one. And one of the reasons is, even though a couple songs are repeated, Mamma Mia 2 had to use all the songs that they didn't use. And clearly, the original Mamma Mia has all the hits.
Right.
And of course, Mamma Mia 2 has Cher, spoilers. But all the people who were championing Mamma Mia 2, I just kept wondering, did you see the first one?
Yeah.
I enjoy both. I think the first one's better. I saw the first one with you.
Yeah.
And that was the opposite of the reaction when we all left the theater after Black Swan.
Sure.
Because I felt we were all going to be of one mind. And after Mamma Mia, I sort of turned to all of you and said, well, that was fantastic. And I was met with blank stares and open jaws. Where should we eat lunch?
There are like at least four movies in theaters right now that I really want to see. The aforementioned Air, the aforementioned Renfield, Sisu, the miner who kills Nazis.
I was hoping to make Sisu the bookend for this episode. Ever since I saw the trailer, I've desperately wanted to see it. I almost went yesterday, but I wasn't feeling well.
Yeah.
And amid much tears, I decided to wait. So I am going to see it before it leaves on Thursday, at least leaves around here on Thursday, because I want to see some Nazis get killed. And Sisu, the gold miner, is Finnish.
Mm-hmm.
And this is interesting because my wife has been to Finland and knows that, curiously enough, during World War II, Finland sided with Germany, but only because Finland has always hated Russia. That's the reason. And because of Finland's historic hatred for Russia, that's what got them to sign on to NATO recently when Russia invaded Ukraine. So Finland is now a NATO country. And so I think one of the things Sisu is doing, besides showing us a lot of Nazis being killed in very nasty ways, is it's suggesting that even though Finland sided with the Nazis, we have individual Finns who were not on board of the Nazi train. But yeah, I'm dying to see Sisu. A film I'm not dying to see, because I think I feel like I've seen the trailer 50 times.
Yeah.
Chevalier.
I've seen the trailer 0 times.
They started showing the trailer a really long time ago. And so I've seen it a bunch of times. I also wanted to tip my hat to Fathom Events, which has been doing a great job. Tonight we're going to see Jedi.
Oh, yeah.
Even though we saw it recently at F This Movie Fest,
Right.
it's finally playing in the big, impressive theater
Oh, that's
at the
cool.
local, and so we want to see it. And also, our local theater, not that it's local, is in Santa Monica, and it's called The Arrow,
mm-hmm.
and it's Arrow. Very similar to The Music Box, and we've been enjoying Arrow's programming because, of course, more often than not, the Arrow screening will be accompanied with a Q&A because this is where all those people live.
Speaking of the Music Box, I should put in a quick plug. If you live in Chicago or near the Chicagoland area, starting this Friday is the 10th annual Chicago Critics Film Festival. Six days of movies programmed by Chicago critics. I've only seen one of the movies so far, but it was fun. And I'm hoping to be there for some of it, so you guys should go. Any movies you're really looking forward to that are coming out in the coming months that we should talk about?
The movie that I'm most looking forward to is actually getting a theatrical release,
okay,
which made me happy, and it's coming out in October, and it's called Killers of the Flower Moon.
Oh, sure.
It's the new Scorsese film, and I'm very excited about it because my wife read the book, and what she has told me about the book tells me this is really going to be, this is up Scorsese's alley. Because the other night, when I couldn't sleep, which is every night, I was watching an interview with Ray Romano on the YouTube machine, and he was talking about when he was in the movie The Irishman.
Yeah.
And that made me want to watch The Irishman again.
That's a good movie.
And so I rewatched The Irishman, and yeah, that's I think when it came out, I saw it streaming. I saw it theatrically.
Mm-hmm.
Twice,
mm-hmm.
and then I bought the Criterion disc, so I saw it multiple times. What struck me about the most recent screening is there a recent movie with a bleaker ending? I find, in fact, am I remembering this correctly? Erica was very...
Yeah, we're not allowed to talk about the ending of The Irishman in my house.
Okay, so I'm not misremembering.
No.
It doesn't get bleaker, and especially because one of the things the film deals with is aging.
Yeah.
There's a point in the film where the De Niro character has to start using a cane, and I'm watching the movie, and I was like, oh, I have a cane now. Is the rest of this going to happen too? And Jan was sort of helpfully pointing out yesterday, well, you know, you have friends and family,
right?
And your son will still talk to you. You don't have to go to the bank to get rebuffed. I know her reaction is spot on. It is just, I mean, anyone who says he wasn't punished for his crimes.
Right.
Good Lord.
The Irishman's greatest crime was coming out the same year as Parasite and Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Yes. Because I really thought, given how much Hollywood loves itself, that the Tarantino movie was a shoe-in.
Yeah.
But I was wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Anything else we want to talk about before we wrap up?
If you're listening to this on Wednesday, you might just have two more nights where you can see Return of the Jedi in a theater, unless mm-hmm. you're Jedi'd out from F This Movie Fest. And check the Fathom Events website, because they are going to have a classic movie screening every month, even though they have decoupled themselves from TCM. And I've read that the new host is, of course, Leonard Maltin, which should at least be interesting. And then there's separate Fathom Events screenings that come up just because it's the anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
A week or two ago, they showed Return of the King in theaters.
Right.
Which was very exciting. So obviously I'm speaking to older films, but we should go to these so that they keep doing them.
I'm always nervous about the quality control, because I know they had some quality control issues even when they were partnered with TCM. So now that they are not, I fear for the future.
I'm not sure if it was on a podcast or a column or it was just Adam and I talking, but we spoke of the phenomenon of any repertory screening that starts with the DVD player menu and just how demoralizing that is.
Well, thanks for talking about the year so far, Jay Bones. Thank you guys for listening. As always, go to fthismovie.com every day for cool movie shit. And new shows come out every Wednesday. Thanks again, JB.
Thanks for listening to FS Movie.